You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Today's podcast is sponsored by DraftKings, the leader in daily fantasy sports, where payday can come every day when you enter their contests with huge cash prizes up for grabs. Making a lineup on DraftKings adds excitement to every night and is pretty simple to do. Draft your lineup and feel the sweat like never before, as every moment means so much more with the DraftKings lineup on the line. To date, DraftKings has paid out over $7 billion to users across all sports. And DraftKings is the leader in daily fantasy sports, so there's no better place to get in on all of the action. Now that you know how to play, download the DraftKings app and sign up using code THPN. New users will get a free entry with their first deposit. That's code THPN to get a free entry with your first deposit, only at DraftKings. Minimum $5 deposit required. Eligibility restrictions apply. See DraftKings.com for details.
This is the Hockey Podcast Network, your home for hockey talk on every team in the NHL.
This is the Broadway Boys Podcast through the Hockey Podcast Network, and we are back with Season 2, Episode 60, as Andy and I are going to talk a little bit about the news going around the league and just, what it means for the New York Rangers going forward as we approach the expansion draft that's right around the corner. I know I feel like every podcast I say that, but it is true. The days are now numbered, and Andy and I are just going to kind of wing it and have some fun here today. But first, obviously, I got to ask Andy, how are you doing?
I'm humid. It's hot. I showered a scant hour ago, and already my hair, which was looking nice and refreshed and lush, is already as greasy as a nervous public defender. But, it's heat, humidity aside, the off season's underway. Things are happening. A lot of things have happened in the last 2 days, ever since the Lightning's Cup parade went down. And yeah, now you can see the dominoes falling. And we've already seen some stuff that we did not expect. And some of the things that are being thrown around by hockey pundits and insiders are definitely interesting. It seems like there's going to be a lot. We all knew there was going to be a lot of action this offseason, but it seems like there might be even more than we originally intended, which is, I think that's partially with the flat cap and teams, like we had mentioned in our last podcast, teams are just going to try to deck as much salary as they can. So, and that affects, some of the names being floated out there are players that almost every team in the league wants. So it affects everyone. So it's definitely off to an interesting start.
Yeah, and I really wanted to kind of start with the Tampa Bay Lightning because I feel like they're at this weird pinnacle point where they've won back-to-back cups. They did it when they were over the cap. They realized that, given the current roster, that things have to change. Players have to be moved. And I feel like there's a consensus around the league that all these middle-of-the-pack teams that they're right on the cusp of being able to compete for a Stanley Cup. And if you look at like some of the teams that were really, up there in terms of being competitive this year, obviously you had the elites of the elite with like Colorado, the Vegas, the Lightning, obviously were one of those teams. And then you have like the second tier teams that, made these kind of crazy runs and felt like they had all these pieces that could have got them there if the Tampa Bay Lightning weren't over the cap. I guess the Islanders were probably part of that tier one team, but like the Minnesota Wild and the Montreal Canadiens and those teams like that. So I don't know, is there any validity to that claim? Because I feel like now that things are starting to get crazy, they're only going to get crazier because every team feels like they're right there, like they're right on the cusp. And, you know, you take away the, you know, the being over the cap, you know, who knows who could have won the cup.
Yeah, I mean, it's said all the time about the parity in this league is you know, as high as it's ever been. Listen, the New York Islanders were, you know, a few goals away from potentially going to the Stanley Cup final. And I think we can safely say they probably would have beat the brakes off of Montreal just like the Lightning did. So, yeah, I mean, and like I said, Vegas and Colorado, even though they maybe mentally shot themselves in the foot a little bit or just they didn't get the goaltending they needed at times. You could easily have seen it going in a, you know, maybe in an alternate timeline, them winning with the pieces they have right now, them winning the cup. So, yeah, it's really interesting because I think, as opposed to the way that I think the league felt like it was trending before the pandemic, I think everyone kind of was seeing, oh, you have to build slowly from within. And if it's the dreaded middle and, you know, but I also think for whatever reason, just the way things have gone down recently, and especially with how Tampa has kind of operated their business. Yes, obviously they're homegrown, and that is one of the biggest things, because they even when they lose pieces, they turn their second and third rounders into really, really good, useful players. But at the same time, I think all it takes is a team of destiny like Montreal to go on that run. And now all of a sudden, every team in the league is like, hey, man, we can get in. If we get in, we could probably go to this cup final. And listen, it might be strange for hockey fans to hear this, but sometimes even a team would rather get in even if it cost them, if it ultimately it didn't help their overall chances in terms of just having a sustainable, organic team to compete for the cup. That playoff revenue is a huge thing, especially with the pandemic right now. And also we're also seeing that the experience is, you know, gravely important, because it's you know, teams play a little bit bigger. And I think when they've been there before, and I think that helps. How many times have we seen, you know, and obviously the Rangers were maybe an example of this, or you see teams that probably shouldn't make it to the playoffs, but they do, and they hang around, you know, they usually get bounced in the first round, but sometimes they actually, you know, even get through the first round into the second round. And that's just because they walk with their chest out a little bit higher, whether it's they have the personnel or not, and it helps them more. And we also see teams that on paper should be ready to make that next step, and they don't, because mentally they just don't have that confidence, or they're not there yet, or they don't, you know, that's why they Edmonton just traded for a Duncan Keith way past his expiration date, because they are of the opinion that he can bring that knowledge that will help them, you know, the Oilers have a little bit more swagger and feel like they have pieces that have been there and done that and can help them get over the hump. So yeah, the parity in this league is pretty high right now. And obviously, and now, I mean, even with some of the news this week, you're seeing that teams are in one fell swoop in one week, they can almost change the entire outlook or dynamic of where they're headed in the future. So, yeah, it's a pretty wild time, which is obviously good for us as hockey fans, because for so long, GMs have all, you know, they kind of sit on their thumbs. They're so afraid to make moves. Well, all it takes is one or two ballsy GMs to start changing their fortunes, where everyone realizes, oh, we can't afford to sit on the sidelines.
Yeah, and you know, it's funny how you see like the different reactions for different teams, right? You have the Edmonton Oilers, who brought in Duncan Keith to kind of, you know, be that stabilizing presence. The guy, you know, has been to deep into the playoffs, won Stanley Cups, played a huge role with the Blackhawks, played crazy minutes, and was just kind of that backbone, steady presence, you know, behind that team. And then you have, you know, the Minnesota Wild and them, you know, basically buying out two guys who thought, you know, they were going to build around a decade ago. And it's like two different teams in two different spots. And, you know, one brings in the older guy, the two shed the two older guys. And it's just, you know, it just kind of starts this whole offseason off with a craze. Now, I do want to get into both of these moves by both of these teams and kind of bring it back to what it means for the Rangers in terms of, you know, some players are now available. Like, how old is too old? You know, you know, how much does analytics play, you know, as a part in these organizations that make them, you know, make these kind of moves? And should we expect more of this stuff to happen before, you know, the signings really start to begin, you know, July 28th with some of the free agents? So first, let's get into Edmonton, because I feel like this one's a little bit juicier, and I had a little bit more, I had more questions with this one, because this one was interesting. Now, when you look at the Edmonton Oilers and how they're built, obviously they center around two players, and the two players are not enough to win playoff games, let alone a playoff round, let alone a Stanley Cup, in my opinion. Now, Edmonton, instead of bringing in more depth, take on a player who I think is trending completely downward and is not really going to help them in exactly what they need. They need depth. They need secondary scoring. They need other options besides, you know, McDavid and Draisaitl. What is the meaning of bringing in Keith and getting him here, or into Edmonton, I should say.
So here's what we know. Duncan Keith was not, he's separated from his wife, his ex-wife. So his son lives with his ex-wife in Canada. Due to the pandemic and him playing in Chicago, obviously with the border restrictions and these, he hasn't seen his son in a while. They've probably reunited since, obviously, but he was looking at having to potentially do that again for another season. So apparently he requested a trade, and I think it was a situation where even though maybe internally Chicago wanted to trade him, or maybe would want to get out from under that cap hit initially, they probably felt like he was the longest tenured player on that team. They didn't want to do wrong by him, considering all he's done for them. You know, the multiple cups, the Conn Smythe Trophy, just all of it. You know, he's a leader on the team. So they probably just didn't. But then he comes to them and says, listen, I would like to be close to my son. You know, they're secretly jumping for joy, because they're like, we need to shed salary in the worst way. This is an albatross of a contract at this part. It's good for it, but they also get to make him happy. So all parties are happy with it, but he's asked for this, right? Then on Edmonton, obviously you have McDavid and Draisaitl have failed to get past the first round, right? Or did they get past in the first round of the bubble? I don't know.
I made a mistake in a blog. They in 2017 they beat the Sharks in a round.
Okay. So they've made the playoffs only a handful of times since McDavid has entered the league, and they've only got out of the first round once, and then they were subsequently eliminated in the second round. So they haven't been able to string a run together in the postseason, despite having two of the best players in the world. So I guess they feel that internally that they need rings in the room, you know, the Pat Maroon effect. You need people that have been there and done that before and know what it takes and can help mentor their younger players in the back end, which in theory, I could maybe understand, right? Here's the problem. Duncan Keith requested a trade. Next season, you know, how many years does he have left on his contract? I should just pull cap friendly. Duncan Keith. So he's got 2 years, or he's got 1 year left, and he's UFA in 20. No, he's got 2 years left at $5.5 million, right? So he's requested a trade. You know this. And you're going to, what? So they not only do they take on Duncan Keith's salary, they don't get Chicago to retain any salary, so they take the full cap hit on, and they give a prospect and a third round pick.
Yeah,
like what the fuck? Like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, I understand, but there was no Keith. The ball was in your court. You wanted this. You were gonna help Chicago. Like, obviously, you have to give them something. Even if it was Caleb Jones, who's ultimately think is probably not much of a prospect, but it's at this point, it's the pick is what makes me more upset. Like, I don't like. It's not, you're doing them a favor, and now I think it's like, it was weird that they asked for him. So obviously the speculation is now Chicago is going to see if they can somehow get get Seth Jones to want to come to Chicago so he can be in the same organization as his brother, even though I have my doubts whether, you know, Caleb Jones will ever play in the NHL. But I digress. Just the ball was firmly in Edmonton's court, and they went after the wrong guy in Duncan Keith. There's plenty of other guys around the league that have cup rings. Maybe they don't have the same weight behind it as a Duncan Keith does, but his on-ice performance has been trending exactly as you would think a guy in his late 30s would. At this point, I think he is maybe a bottom pairing defender, if I'm being generous. That's great. Maybe if you can shelter him, maybe then it's worth it. But you look at Edmonton's back end, and outside of Darnell Nurse, it's a whole bunch of meh. Like Tyson Barrie, not a good defender. Dmitry Kulikov, Adam Larson, these are guys that you would all like to be, even like younger guys who are kind of finding their game, like Ethan Bear, outside of Nurse, like the rest of them. It's just, I just don't understand this at all. I understand the sentiment of maybe wanting a player with that type of weight to mentor and help usher in a cultural shift or mindset change. But at that price, are you kidding me?
Well, yeah, at that price and that roster, listen, if the New York Rangers brought in Duncan Keith to play for the next two seasons, I'd be like, you know what? I let's see what he's got. I think it'd be beneficial for the locker room. He'd be beneficial for a lot of the young prospects that we have coming up. Like, there's a guy that as soon as those kids walk into the locker room, they're going to look to lead, to be the voice, to kind of, take control when, things, start to get, out of hand in the middle of the season, to be that, voice of reason if they go on a three-game skid. There's different elements that Duncan Keith could bring to a locker room, but it depends which locker room. I don't see, to me, I feel like, all right, so about a year ago, I think you and I had a podcast where I told you that on NHL radio, they said the Minnesota Wild are the furthest team from a Stanley Cup, and that is including the Seattle Kraken. And I was like, they're too old. They're trending in the wrong direction. They just keep getting older. And, for them, they brought in a few young pieces, and all of a sudden it's changed their franchise. I'm still waiting for Edmonton to finally be like, you know what, we need to add, X, Y, and Z because we can't get past the first round. Whereas Edmonton now, they're like, no, we need a steady presence in the locker room. We need the guy to teach us on how it's done. It's like, you're beyond that point. You need to bring the complementary pieces the Minnesota Wild were able to find via the draft or via trade and grow your team that way. You're not rebuilding. You're not a team that has too many young pieces and needs that, voice of reason in the locker room. And you certainly don't need it on the back end. It's one thing to stick Joe Thornton on your fourth line if that's what you want to do. But, they're acting like Keith is going to be playing 25 minutes a game. And they're gloating about this move like it's some genius move. Now, I do want to ask you, Andy, because obviously we kind of agree that was kind of a weird move that doesn't make any sense. Is there a chance that, Keith figures out and plays a really good, simple game in Edmonton and actually ends up thriving for the next 2 years with that roster?
I think he will probably take on a reduced role, which might aid him. But the problem is the role he's going to be playing is not commiserate of a $5.5 million player. And this is something you can get out. How much, when Tampa Bay Lightning brought in Pat Maroon as their sole cup voice, how much was he making? A million something, maybe? he wasn't making a lot of money, and it was Pat Maroon. Doesn't clearly have the same weight, but lo and behold, apparently, I don't know if that's it helped, but apparently, like they said, he did work in that locker room all year, and this is when they were kind of reeling from that first round knockout by Columbus a couple seasons ago. So, I mean, you can get these type of leaderships out there. Guys with rings are out there, but it doesn't have to come at this cost. And again, it's not even the fact, it's like I wouldn't do it if I was a GM, just because I know his on ice play will never be commensurate with what, even if it, I don't think it will offset maybe, you know, that what he brings to a locker room, even if he is like the commensurate pro if he's, you know, he just helps galvanize this entire Oilers team together and find some more faith in themselves and maybe play with a little bit more swagger. But it's just the price was way too high. And yeah, clearly Edmonton doesn't invest heavily in their analytics department, you know, and it obviously it's also made worse by the fact that even though he doesn't have a cup ring, that Ryan Suter a scant few days later is suddenly bought out by the Minnesota Wild. And despite his age, he is a guy who is still a very good defender. And also the fact that there's rumblings that Mark Giordano might get exposed. So he might be a guy that, you know, not that they would ever trade with their, you know, their rival, but it's just these guys who are still productive and that who can be had for less than $5.5 million will eventually be out there. Maybe they don't have the totality of weight behind their name that a Duncan Keith will, but their on-ice performance, I'm sure, will at least soften the blow if they're maybe not, you know, if they were only just a contributor to a passenger, you know?
Absolutely. And you know, I'm glad you brought the Minnesota Wild, because the Minnesota Wild seems to be on the reverse end of this spectrum. And, you know, they shed some, you know, I wouldn't say dead weight, because they're going to have to eat a lot of their, a lot of that cap space
for a long time.
Yeah, for a very long time, which is fine. And if there's ever a team that knows something about just, you know, dead cap just hitting, you know, affecting us, is certainly us. And, you know, because we've had so many big contracts bought out. But I do think it says a lot. You know, it's not really about the money and the cap hits over the next few years. It's more about the message it kind of sends to the fan base and to the team, and that, you know, Minnesota is kind of ready to move on from, you know, what they were trying to do. And it's kind of like there's a new beginning in Minnesota, and it's a little refreshing. And, you know, even though those are buyouts and it's almost like addition by subtraction, whereas the Minnesota Wild, I'm way more confident that they shed those two guys. They create a little bit more cap room this year. They eat it, you know, over the, oh God, I forget how many years they eat it, but it's a pretty long time. And, you know, I don't know. It kind of speaks to me a little bit, like, cause I could see, you know, it's what kind of the Rangers have done to some of their bad contracts. And whenever there's a buyout, it's like, ah, man, the money kind of stings over the next few years, but it's kind of refreshing and new, and you see a team trending in the right direction, and they do a move like this. And I just feel like there's a team on the move. I'm confident in what they're doing. Whereas like Edmonton, I felt the complete opposite. I felt like he just panicked, you know, read an article that, you know, teams need experience and to, you know, get older and gritty and playoff experience, and give me Keith and take whatever you want. You know, kind of like that situation.
Yeah. I mean, this obviously shocked a lot of people. I'm sure most of all it shocked Suter and Parise. I think there was like a report floating around that Suter just hung up on Guerin like before they could even finish the phone call.
Really?
Yeah, it's bad. And the weird thing is, obviously those contracts were bad. Even though Parise is definitely bad for Parise, Ryan Suter, obviously still a pretty good, productive player in his own, not a bad player by any means, but just obviously not worth that cap hit. But yeah, I mean, this was a, you know, pun intended, this was a wild one to hear. And yeah, I mean, to your point, obviously you understand what they're trying to do. They're because, you know, they've been in the dreaded mill for so long. It's kind of been their fate. So they're trying, clearly, Bill Guerin, he's made a couple of wild moves. keep saying Wild. I don't mean to do that, I swear. He's made a couple of really ballsy moves since coming in, and he's clearly trying to overhaul the roster in his in his image, in his head. And I like that, honestly. I like the fact that, you know, because GMs kind of, so many GMs just kind of inherit the team that was given to them, and they don't want to change up too much because a part of them is like, well, I can have a little bit more job security. Whereas if you do the type of tearing down that he's doing and then it doesn't work out, you're probably going to be gone pretty quick, because you not only did you just not get the job done, you also like squandered good pieces that you probably had. You let them go, you know? So it's definitely a gamble. I mean, listen, yes, they have cap space for the next 2 years, but from 2023 to 2025, those two guys, that's $14.74 million in dead cap space. That's a lot of money. And the cap is staying static. So it's weird, because at first I didn't know what to think. I'm like, they're supposed to be competing now, but you're hearing all this weird stuff about Kaprizov playing hardball and that he might run back to Russia. I don't know. You don't know if it's posturing. You don't know if he's like, you know what, honestly, does he really want to be with play in the Wild? There's a lot of that going on. Players do not seem to be as shy as they once were about asking for change of sceneries. You know, we see in the NBA all the time. I thought it was only a matter of time before you see it becomes more commonplace in the NHL. You have to wonder. It's like, when it happened, a part of me is like, well, are they rebuilding? Are they going to then immediately use his cap space to go after Seth Jones or Jack Eichel? Are they going to start trading their prospects? I mean, it's very strange. I don't know. I honestly don't know if he's going for it or if he's trying to just retool in his image, or he just felt he had to, kind of like Phil Kessel in Toronto, you have to get out from under the player. Even if it's like, yeah, I honestly, this one shocked me, and there's a lot to read into it. I assume Zach Parise goes back to Lou Lamoriello on the island, so he'll be an Islander, which it is what it is. Parise is, he'll be a good depth winger for them, you know, especially maybe under that system, he'll be a little bit, he bring them a little bit more goal scoring if they need it. Suter, I think every team in the league who's besides the Minnesota Wild is going to want to be in on that, which means he probably won't be cheap. But James, I'll tell you this, he probably won't cost $5.5 million. So hindsight 2020 for Edmonton, you know, unfortunately this happened a scant few days later. I wonder if they had known that, if they would have maybe had made the pitch to Ryan Suter, come play with the best player in the world. He's going to get one eventually, right? I don't know, man. This was just a crazy, unexpected thing to happen, and Bill Guerin's got something in mind. It'll be fascinating to see what it is.
Yeah, I think. Yeah, you know, looking at that move, you know, I'm more optimistic about it. I believe that if you go into a situation where those two players are making all that money, they're kind of old news. The franchise needs something new. They need something refreshing. Some players just, they run their course through an organization, and it's not reflective of the person or the player as a person or the player as like an actual player. Like you said, like Suter was, not, the worst defenseman in the league, certainly not worth his money, but,
still now, a pretty good defenseman though.
Yeah. Pretty good defenseman and that certainly belongs on an NHL roster. But, for me, looking at how the Rangers were built for so long and, you have some of that, those players that you just knew were kind of just, you brought in, they were older, it's kind of stale, it doesn't seem to be working. I think those two players represent the Minnesota Wild of old, where they were just boring, middle of the pack, that keep finishing, just inside the playoffs or just outside the playoffs. And, I just felt like, those two players, to me, it makes the Minnesota Wild a little bit more stale, and I don't think they were really benefiting that hockey club. And if you get rid of that weight, you get rid of that cap, and you just kind of turn a blind eye to it and eat it for the next couple of years, you can transform your franchise around players that are going to be here long term. And I don't think there's anything wrong with what Guerin did. Both of those players lined up on an NHL roster somewhere, and hopefully, especially Suter gets the cup he deserves. you know, if you know, Parise ends up on the Islanders, he can go to hell. I don't care less if he gets a cup or not. It's just like one of those things where, you know, I feel like that move, I don't know, for me, buyouts that large kind of just reminds me of the Rangers getting rid of their dead weight, and it does wonders for my psyche. And that's how I kind of view the Minnesota Wild. If I'm a Minnesota Wild fan, I'd be thrilled. Now, I do want to get into, you know, with that move being made, obviously there's a trend towards, you know, a lot of the analytics departments and of these teams are growing. And I saw a chart the other day that represented it pretty well. Just, you know, here in 2015 or whatever year it was, here's the analytic department for every single team. And it was like one, maybe two people, a franchise. Today, the bad teams, the ones that you see, only have one or two people running their analytics department. A lot of, you know, teams have, you know, five and actually have a team and not just a couple of people that, you know, run stats, maybe prior to game time. So do you think some of these bigger moves, obviously not the Edmonton one, but, you know, this offseason, especially now that they have a new team, the Seattle Kraken, how much are we going to see analytics drive the current, you know, the way teams are currently built in the NHL? Because you see in baseball, right, there's a big right now, a lot of friction between the old school and new school analytics, where, you know, the Yankees, you know, obviously hit all those home runs, and some people say you need, you know, players to, you know, get on base and then drive those guys in. So what is the, you know, overall state of the NHL, and you know, is it just going to get crazier with the analytics, and are we going to see something in the NHL like we see in the MLB?
I mean, the NHL is definitely a few, I don't know, a few paces behind the MLB.
They're very far. Yeah, they're very far behind.
Yeah, the MLB, especially because there are still, whereas baseball is a very static game and a little bit more easy quantifiable, where hockey is a little bit more free flowing. There's a lot more physics going on that can affect player performance. The quality of teammates is so much more impactful. But that being said, you are kind of seeing the same thing, in that there are, and look, I think the problem is, the like everything else, the right, you know, analytics are a tool, and they just tell you something. How you interpret that something, or what you think that something means, is kind of what ultimately makes it either useful or not. And obviously, a lot of teams will give canned answers like about that, like, oh, you know, we have our own analytics, or we believe it's an important tool, but we believe it's only one part of the Well, yeah, like, totally, I understand that. I mean, listen, I think the problem, what I kind of get my feathers up at, is that a lot of times that it'll be, they'll say like, oh, well, all this nonsense. And it's like, you know, this nonsense is just something that, it's like you have someone just watching the game and saying like, okay, you know, this person, when he was on the ice, this is how many shots his team took, or he took for high danger chances, or how many were prevented when he was on the ice. And it's just as simple as that. It can be something as simple as shots, but because it's like, to make it easier, they give it a different name and say it's this. And all of a sudden it's like this weird voodoo of people that don't, only computers, like, I just don't know how they think this information is getting, you know, well, disseminated. But yeah, I just think it's one of those things that when a team wins the cup, it's like, oh, Tampa finally added, you know, grit, and they won the cup. It's like, well, they added players who seem to forecheck a lot, but they added players who seem to forecheck a lot, but also had good underlying numbers. Whereas Toronto added players that were perceived to be gritty, in like a Wayne Simmons, but his on ice analytics have been horrible forever, and he didn't do absolute jack squat for them. You know, it's just weird. When it works out, it's like, it's never like, oh, you know, hey, like they did a good job. The analytics played a good part. It's like, no, they found that intangible whatever. And let's add, like I said, analytics, it's not the end all be all, of course not. Obviously, there are sometimes you have players that are just simply in different situations, and a change of scenery can really transform their game, and you can see big progress being made or situations. But I think for the most part, I think a lot of the times it's that, especially on Twitter, you see a lot of, because obviously you have analytics that teams that work for teams, so they're not releasing their stuff, but you have people doing public models and saying like, hey, I made a model, this is what it says. They're trying to do something. They don't purport to say this is what it is. They say my model says this is what I'm coming up with. And it's like people take that's their, what they see as the gospel, even though sharing your results and other people sharing their results and trying to find variance in models, like that's kind of part of it, you know what I mean? So sorry, I'm turning in this to a diatribe.
No,
go ahead.
Well, no, because I think I brought this up to you before. I do want to do like an analytics podcast where you do kind of explain some of the things, because, you know, I think it gets a little too overwhelming with some of the stats that they keep track of. And, you know, for me, you know, growing up playing the game, obviously, there was very few stats actually being kept, you know, just playing the game itself and then watching hockey growing up, you know, there was plus minus, you know, goals for, goals against, like it just seemed like there were none of these in-depth like analytical, like who's driving the goal scoring and stuff like that. And for me, I think those stats are truly important because they do tell a picture of the bigger thing. But you touched on this before. Hockey is not like a baseball where it's pitcher versus batter. You go up, this is what this hitter does against lefties, righties, in a dome, outside, in the south, in the cold. Like there's so many different variables that you can pinpoint to one situation. Whereas hockey is played, you know, it's organized chaos. Like it's so hard to actually tell you what makes one team win versus another team. And, you know, you could say, you know, this analytics, like this team needs more of this team needs more of that. But at the end of the day, it's like the reason why that team has good analytics and the other team has poor analytics is certainly players. Like there's a difference between the Tampa Bay Lightning and the Ottawa Senators or the Detroit Red Wings. Like it's pretty clear and apparent. I don't know how much of a factor analytics plays in the Tampa Bay Lightning versus the New York Islanders. I think it's the X factors that drive those results more so. All right, we want a team that can make the playoffs. I think analytics could help you there. I don't know if it can win you a championship. I think ultimately you need the best players in the world with a very good coach that is adaptable and can play different styles in different rounds against different teams. Like not many analytics can put that together. That's just my opinion, but I do think it's a huge piece on how you get there.
No, exactly. And that's the thing. It's not the end all be all. I mean, I think you would, there's, like I said, the nature, by the very nature of analytics and things like that, there's always going to be variance. Mm-hmm. Not many people had, the Montreal Canadiens making it to the Stanley Cup final, and granted, if they played the playoffs over again, they most likely wouldn't. But just sometimes goalies get hot, and they have teams can play. You know, teams can just all of a sudden bring their pieces, elements together, and have some good performances. We've talked about parity. It's just the thing is, I think it's something that if you can put yourself in the conversation, if you are someone that makes shrewd moves and you can avoid, because at least it avoids the fact that giving money to like David Clarkson, like the Leafs did all those years ago,
yeah,
where it's like he has a whatever ridiculous season he has for New Jersey. And he's a Toronto-born player, so they're like, he's going to come home to Toronto. We're trading for this guy. He's going to save our franchise. And then all of a sudden, because you see the number, you see like his goals and assists, but then all of a sudden, if you dig a little bit deeper, all of a sudden you realize like, oh, this guy was basically kind of standing close to the net and was getting fed everything by Patrick Elias or whatever, or whoever was on the ice with him. And then when Patrick Elias was off the ice, his performance was horrible. Like it was just bad. And that's the thing. He was just right. He had a lucky season. He had right place, right time. So it's like, it helps you avoid the pitfalls that get, it helps you. I say this, it's like, if there's a path to the Stanley Cup, those are twigs that you don't have to run over with the spoke of your bicycle that you can avoid. You know what I mean? They can, they can obviously help you a little. They can also hinder you a lot if you choose to ignore them or choose to interpret them wrong, you know? So, and it's not the end all be all. There are some things that are totally unquantifiable, but it's just something that you can, it's like good practices. It's like putting it's like keeping your body healthy, basically. If the team's a body, it's like eating health. You'll put yourself in a better position ultimately to get there. But obviously to get 100% of the way, you need good coaching. You need buy-in from the players. You need good performances. You need trust in your teammates. And that's the thing. But, you know, sometimes there are teams that have all that and they just, unfortunately, their body fails them because they're just, you know, not, the personnel is just not up to snuff.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at, you know, just all the teams in the NHL, right, where the markets are, you know, I do think that if you throw in Lafreniere in a market where there's less pressure to succeed, he actually might do better. And if you put him in New York City, he might have a tough time adjusting. He might have a tough time with the more distractions, more media scrutiny. Like, there's so many factors that factor outside of just being on the ice and playing and, you know, goals for 60 minutes and goals against for 60 minutes. Like, there's so many more elements, I think, that like kind of play into it. But I do agree with you. I mean, all these need to be a part of the conversation. And, you know, if you look at this offseason, right, I feel like this year more than ever, and maybe it's because Hank's gone off our team and our roster is so young, you know, do you feel that now that the league is getting younger and the next generation is kind of on the cusp of really taking over the league? And I know you have the Ovechkins and the Crosbys, but, you know, the players that we kind of grew up and that were our age that are kind of, you know, stars in the NHL are kind of fading and the new ones are kind of taking over. Do you think it's going to be like that? Do you think more analytics are going to be coming to the department? And I got to ask you a question, Andy. How prepared are the New York Rangers when it comes to analytics? And I know we've touched on it with Val Kett and what his company does, but, you know, can you give it, enlighten us with any information you have on that?
Well, all right. So as someone, even though I'm someone who I think analytics can be extremely useful, I am not the most up on analytics. Like, I can't tell you off the top of my head, like, every, you know, what, besides things like Corsi and, you know, maybe Fenwick, there's so many stats that I can't even keep track of them. But obviously, usually if someone who does know, and maybe we'll have Jay Fresh on the podcast one time to explain all this to us, because we're children, can just explain, and they'll just explain the way it was, like, oh, okay, that's something that's actually pretty simple. But it's a long winded way of saying it. It's just easier to say one word. As far as the Rangers go, I mean, I believe they currently have a few. I think actually on Twitter there was like every year, I think there's an analytics, like a chart, like of every team's analytics personnel. Like, and I remember the Rangers at least had three names on it. And here's the thing, different teams have different, they might have different names for different titles. Like,
right,
it might not say, some teams will flat out say, like, you know, like you have Matt Cater. Does he work for the Canes, who are the Carolina Hurricanes are very heavily into analytics. And you know why? Because their owner is a cheapskate, and much like Moneyball, Billy Bean, he's like, why, you can have undervalued players that add stuff. And because at the end of the day, he wants to save money. He doesn't want to spend a crazy amount of money. He thinks it's not worth taking defensemen in like whatever the first round, whatever the hell he said. If he didn't want to pay. He's super lucky that Brind'Amour just wants to live in Carolina and doesn't want to leave, because, you know, he doesn't want to pay him that much. Oh yeah, here, I actually found it. So there's an analytics list. So, and here's the thing. So I have a list of everyone that has an analytics related job in the NHL currently with teams. There are not every team in the league is on this list, James.
Okay.
Can you guess a team that doesn't have a single analytics person on this list? based on our conversations today.
Well, I'm going to say Edmonton Oilers.
I'm sorry. They have one. They have one person. It's Justin Mahey, the manager of hockey analysis. And that's what I'm saying is that so you take that as with a grain of salt, where that's hockey analysis, but that could just be breaking down film or video. As it stands, the New York Rangers have 1, 2, 3, 4 people. They have a director of player, Jim Sullivan, who we've heard before. He is the director of player care development, also slash analytics and hockey tech.
Okay.
You have Richard Dry, director of sports technologies. So that would kind of determine that they're, you know, technology and computers and player tracking. I do know the Rangers are very big into like researching, you know, like physical growth and family history and health stuff. They're one of the best teams in the league for that. We know Jim Ramsey has a great reputation, at least as an on-ice, you know, trainer. But remember when Philip Hedel got drafted and there was all this talk that they spoke to his parents and, like, you know, his family lineage and the fact that he was so tall and both of his parents, whatever, are athletes. So they have a performance analyst and they have a software developer data analyst. So they have, that's better. If you look at a scant few seasons ago, this is way better than what they had. So they're clearly starting to get into it. Drury has already said it's a tool that he thinks is very important and they will use. There's been speculation because this week we saw that the Rangers hired, two of Gallant's, who are the two guys that follow Gerard Gallant everywhere? Mike Kelly and the other guy, you know what I'm saying? To the Rangers.
I'm so bad.
I got it. It's Mike Kelly and Gord Murphy got promoted from Hartford. So, yeah. So, I mean, but there's a spot left. So there has been speculation that that spot will maybe go to a assistant who is maybe a little bit more progressive, you know, just to kind of round out that type of think tank behind the bench, or at least help disseminate a little bit more progressive thing to Gerard Gallant, who I think is a guy who is maybe a little bit old school. Not that that's a bad thing at all, mind you. But yeah, it's funny because you see a lot of the teams that don't have, you know, I don't see the Montreal. No, Montreal's on here. There's a bunch of, yeah. But yeah, it's funny. It's that the teams that don't seem, there's a lot of teams that aren't big market teams, but that do seem to have a good number of analytics people, you know. And also, excuse me, I said Matt Cater, which is for who I meant to say was Eric Tulski, whereas Matt Cain works for the Devils, and he was a former presence on hockey Twitter and social media, and these people get snatched up because they do good work. But I mean, the way the Rangers, I think, are set up good. I do know also that our very own Steve Valiquette, who gives kind of like his own, obviously he's really does a lot of things, data tracking. He's got he owns Sport Logic. Is that him? Or the tracking project? I forget what the name of his company is. But he during the Rangers intermission reports, he gives a lot of stats a lot, but he breaks down a pretty digestible way. He's definitely shares his information with the New York Rangers. I mean, he works for MSG. I know he doesn't work for the team, but I assume he consults for them. He helps them from time to time. I'm sure they ask his opinion if they need something and he can help them out with the stats. I'm sure he does, you know? So I think the Rangers, much like a lot of teams on this list that I'm looking at, seem to have bought in even more. And hell, Seattle's not even in the league yet. You know, they have one of the largest analytics departments on record right now. They have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. They have 6 people in their analytics department, supposedly, you know? I think only Toronto seems to have more right now. Coming in, if they're going to try to, if you're going to be taking, it's like teams are basically, outside of a few certain situations, teams are basically giving you their scraps and saying, all right, these are the people, these are what we see as superfluous. We don't want it anymore, or we either don't want it anymore or it hurts to lose, but we think they're a little overvalued or make too much money. It's like, this is like the only pinky we're willing to cut off, you know? So now they have all these people that are going to go dive into the numbers and dive into the video and try to dissect, like, does this guy who this team is getting rid of, do they think he's not worth it? Is there a disconnect there? Is there a reason they think that? Is like, is he a victim of circumstance or is he just not good? You know, so I think that's why they're set up that way, because they're going to have to make the best choice for their that's in their best future interest. And I think this is something having a larger analytics team can really help them.
Yeah. And, you know, if you look at just the way analytics are right now in sports, right? Obviously, football heavy analytics. You have baseball heavy analytics. But if there was some sort of indicator or a machine that can spew out numbers that will give you the recipe for a winning team, or, you know, just a winning franchise, there'd be a lot of money to be made. And, you know, I just personally think it's the pen and paper more than it is the actual picture. Like, you can try to build your team based off of analytics, and you can try to predict how a team that does this better, does that better, does this better will do against teams that don't do those things as well. But ultimately, I think it's a coin flip. And especially when you get into the playoffs, right? It's a best of seven series. It's not just a one game coin toss, who's going to win. You know, there's different elements. There's adjustments that constantly have to be made. You know, there are times when, you know, if you look at a team like, you know, the Tampa Bay Lightning, who, you know, when they got swept by the Columbus Blue Jackets, right? You know, they kind of, you know, got stuck playing comfortable hockey and couldn't get, you know, things going against them. And then the next year, you know, they're able to figure things out. They adjusted series to series. They adjusted on the fly against certain teams in certain situations. And you just saw them blossom into a team that just does everything well and are able to change it up when they need to. And, you know, I thought the Islanders were on the cusp of being able to do that. I thought that was the Stanley Cup Finals, the East Finals, whatever they called it this year. You know, I thought that was the Stanley Cup Finals because I saw two coaches that were, you know, sometimes even put ego aside and say, you know, this system is not going to do well against this team. I need to switch it up. And, you know, I think it's the ability to be flexible, ability to bring in players that can play that flexible game, that can maybe do a little bit of every element good instead of one specific thing very well, which is why you see, I think, teams like the Edmonton Oilers fail, because, you know, they have two guys that can score very, very well, but when you shut them down, they don't really do anything else that great. You know, team kind of lacks in every other department. So if you're not going to outscore your problems, what good is it having those two players? So I, you know, it's just interesting, Andy, to see, you know, the growth of analytics and how they become more prevalent, especially within the fan base and Twitter. And, you know, as soon as someone has a bad game, there's a million different things get thrown up online about, you know, their performance over the, you know, last few seasons or season or games. So, you know, I kind of just wanted to touch base on that. And I want to do an extended podcast where we kind of bring up some of the stuff that you do see online and kind of dive into it and talk about it. And this way, especially me, I'm more of an eyeball guy. And I know you send me some analytical stuff and I love that stuff. You know, trust me, I love numbers. I love looking at the stats and stuff like that. But, you know, overall, I do think it's just a tool. And I think you see it the same way too. But, you know, I just wanted to ask you to see, you know, because this year I feel like it's a little bit crazy. And I don't know if it's the COVID reset where, you know, we're kind of going back to the 82 game schedule and things will be a little bit more normal, that, you know, I don't know. I just feel like the league is trending in a direction. It's getting younger. We're getting older. And I just wanted to see, you know, I see other sports changing. I just wanted to see where hockey was, you know, kind of in that picture.
Yeah, I mean, listen, we talk about how it's getting prevalent, but at the same time, Pierre Maguire was just hired to be director of player development, right, for the Senators. And Pierre has had maybe some not, you know, he's on the record as, I don't necessarily think he's totally off base, that he is someone who thinks that there are some unquantifiable intangibles, which is absolutely true. I think the only problem is that Pierre has a very deep track record, especially when it comes to prospects, of championing guys who have, like, these, and I say this in air quotes, like heroic performances at like World Junior tournaments, or was like scrappy players for, yeah, you know, he's when the Montreal Canadiens picked Carey Price over Angelo Esposito, he was like lost his mind or something, you know. It's just, yeah, I think so. He gets dunked on for that, but yeah, I think there's very much there are people that are very, you know, obviously the most insufferable people are the ones that are like heavily anti, and the ones that are like take it as gospel, you know what I mean? Whereas like, I think the truth is, like you said, it's like the Islanders are shopping Nick Leddy, where they're probably like, Nick Leddy has been playing with the big minutes for us forever. But all of a sudden, it seems to me that he doesn't seem to be doing some of the things he used to do as well as he did. But he's still a pretty okay defenseman. He's still an NHL defenseman, serviceable one. Let's take a look at his numbers. Huh. It looks like all of a sudden he's not driving offensive play as good as he has in past seasons. That's weird, you know? And how old is he? He's 29. Okay, that kind of confirms what I was starting to think. So maybe we should move out from this contract before it becomes an albatross and we can't move him, right? And that's something that it'll never come up that analytics played a part in that, or we don't even know if it did, but I'm just saying if it did, like it was useful. You saw something in his performance, and we saw Trotz leaned on Pelican Pulock more and less on him, and has given him more offensive zone starts because he's been struggling. His even strength defense has been struggling in the last few seasons, whereas he was always, you know, their number one for a while, even though maybe he was never a bona fide number one, but he was always a very good skater and good in transition, good at shutting things down. So, yeah, I think most of the times when things, you know, when it's all goes right, you use all your inputs and your tools, your eyes, you use the analytics to help you maybe confirm things that you suspected. And then you go about your business and you just treat it as business. And that's that, you know, you don't you know, cry about it. You don't like blast it as gospel, or, you know, you just kind of do it, and it helps you avoid maybe situations where like some other teams like Edmonton eventually find themselves in, you know?
Yeah. And it's certainly funny just to kind of see everything play out, and, you know, in 10 years, I think, you know, analytics will be even bigger in all sports. And it's just so funny see the friction between, you know, people that, you know, especially like baseball, because it's more of like a problem, because especially we live in New York, people are Yankee fans. Yankees are, you know, neck deep in analytics, and that's basically what manages their baseball team. And then fans don't know what to do because they're not winning World Series, because they spent their entire life being winners. And now that they can't get the job done, they're blaming all these analytics and home runs, and we need old school baseball. It's just so funny how it all works. And it's just like, listen, like analytics do tell the picture of what's going on the ice. And, you know, you said it right. It's pretty soon
how you interpret jobs, totally
how you interpret it. Exactly. You took the words right out of my mouth. So, all right. I don't know if you have anything else that you really want to discuss or, you know, dive into, but, you know, I feel like you put me a little bit at ease with all the analytics and the state of the Rangers.
Yeah, just to end that, it's like, look, I think the hard part is that a lot of times, like I said, analytics are still pretty much at least as it relates to the NHL, are pretty much in its infancy. And we've seen all that, you know, warming the Corsi stuff we've talked about for so many years with like Carolina, where even though they weren't getting the results early on, even though they had good underlying analytics, it's like, yeah, it's still developing. And sometimes, unfortunately, it's like there are pictures of me in a high school yearbook where I have braces and a pizza face. You know what I mean? And not that I'm a stone cold fox right now, but at the same time, it's like, we're, you know, there's going to be awkward phases when you're growing, right?
When you had that long hair, Andy.
I went through phases, but but yeah, but like I'm saying, it's like it's things. It's, I think when people see things, whether it's opinions or analytics, I think a lot of the time it's taken as like, all right, this person thinks this is the end of the road and this is what it is. Where sometimes it's just, you know, it's trying to figure out bigger ways to do that. But if you do it in public, people take everything, whether it's a trade rumor they saw on, you know, Talking Hockey or whatever, or, you know, someone posts a chart the person posting it is claiming it's gospel, or everyone else think it's gospel, when sometimes it's just people just trying to figure out, is there more to the story? So, yeah. So that's basically it for that. Congratulations to Pekka Rinne on a excellent career. He retires this week. It obviously has made me think a little bit about what's going to happen to Henrik Lundqvist, a similar guy, older goaltender, for some nice accolades, just never won the big one, unfortunately. So you do wonder how that affects that. You're already hearing about people waving or some players waving their no move so they could be exposed. Jeff Skinner is going to waive his no move clause to get exposed in the expansion draft. It's a lot of money. Does Seattle take him? Although they'll need some faces, so we'll see. But who knows?
They need to be over the minimum.
Yeah, so that's the thing. You have to find someone who can be usable. Like, he might not be what people thought what Buffalo thought he was, but he might, if he gets you to the cap floor, and by the time you're good, that cap hit is, his contract's almost done. Although I don't know, I think he's got a little bit more. We'll see on that. Like you said, they have to get the cap floor, so they might have to take some overpriced guys, but as long as they can be useful in some capacity, you go for the guy that's like overpriced, but at least has some use than the guy who's overpriced and can't bring much of anything to your team. Cough, cough, Duncan Keith. I assume the Rangers will eventually buy out D'Angelo. Who knows when, though? I don't think they're under the gun to do that, really. I think they'll do it on their own time. Other than that, I just think every day I think you're going to hear more weird things roll out from a Friedman or an insider or, local beat writers. Because obviously this expansion draft's getting close. I have no idea what's going on with Jack Eichel. I think Elliot Friedman said the price has gone down, but still pretty high. I just think teams are going to wait because obviously I get it. Kevin Adams has to try to get the best deal he can. Teams are obviously going to wait him out, and I think it's going to be wait till he starts sweating a little bit, and then he's going to have to make a choice. Because I think with everything with Jack Eichel's injury and the fact that the longer this goes on and it seems to be unresolved, he's going to have to do something. Like, at some point, is he going to miss the totality of next season? So at a certain point, something's got to give. Whether or not, I don't know if that eventually means he's going to have to try to keep Jack for one more season to get this figured out, or not make the trade until after. Yeah, that's going to hurt the price. So we'll see what happens there. Because at first, it felt like sides were hot and heavy to get it done, but at the same time, obviously the price has made some teams balk and has pushed that back. So yeah, we'll see what happens on that. And like I said, a lot of stuff going on right now, and I assume the second we stop recording this podcast, something huge is going to happen, because of course it will. I said buckle up last week, and right now I'm kind of getting thrown around the back seat because there's a lot of stuff going on, and I assume there's only more wild things to come. That time pun was intended. Thank you for listening to the Broadway Boys podcast. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Boys Pod, and please rate, review, and subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, SoundCloud, or thehockeypodcastnetwork.com.
You're listening to the Hockey Podcast Network on Twitter at HockeyPodNet. New episodes every Monday and Thursday. Download at thehockeypodcastnetwork.com or wherever you get your podcasts from.